There was a hammering on the door of the armoury. That was the aunts for you. The door was four thicknesses of oak and iron, but they banged on it anyway. "We will not tolerate this waywardness," said Aunt Danuta. There was a crash from the other side of the door. "Are you fighting in there?" "No, I'm writing a flute sonata," shouted Roland. Something heavy hit the door. Aunt Danuta pulled herself together. She looked like Miss Tick in general outline, but with the eyes of the perpetually offended and the mouth of an instant complainer. "If you don't do as you're told, I will tell your father," she began, and stopped when the door was yanked open. Roland had a cut on his arm, his face was red, sweat was dripping off his chin, and he was panting. He raised his sword in a trembling hand. Behind him, on the other side of the grey room, was a suit of very battered armour. It turned its helmet to look at the aunts. This made a squeaking noise. "If you dare disturb my father," Roland said as they stared at it, "I shall tell him about the money that's being taken out of the big chest in the strong room. Don't lie." For a moment, a blink would have missed it. Aunt Danuta's face had guilt written on it, but it vanished with speed. "How dare you? Your dear mother is dead," shouted Roland and slammed the door. The helmet's visor was pushed up and half a dozen Feagles peered out.
"Crevens, what a pair of old corbies," said Big Jan.
"My aunts," said Roland darkly.
"What's a corby?"
"It's like a big old crow that hangs around waiting for someone to die," said Billy Bigchin.
"Ah, then you've met them before," said Roland with a glint in his eye.
"Let's have another go, shall we? I think I'm getting the hang of it."
There was a grumble of protests from every part of the armour, but Rob Anybody shouted it down.
"All right, we'll give the lad one more chance," he said. "Get to your posts."
There were clangs and much swearing as the Feagles climbed around inside the suit, but after a few seconds the armour seemed to pull itself together. It picked up a sword and lumbered toward Roland, who could hear the muffled orders coming from inside. The sword swung, but in one quick movement he deflected it, stepped sideways, swung his own sword in a blur, and chopped the suit in half with a clang that echoed around the castle. The top part hit the wall. The bottom half just rocked, still standing. After a few seconds, a lot of small heads slowly rose above the iron trousers.
"Was that supposed to happen?" Roland said. "Is everyone, whole?"
A quick count revealed that there were indeed no half-Feagles, although there was a lot of bruising and Daft Woolly had lost his spog. A lot of Feagles were walking in circles and banging at their ears with their hands, though. It had been a very loud clang.
"No a bad effort at that time," said Rob Anybody vaguely. "You seem to be getting the knowing of the fighting."
"It definitely seemed better, didn't it?" said Roland, looking proud. "Shall I have another go?"
"No, I mean, no, said Rob. "No, I reckon that's enough for today."
Roland glanced up at the little barred window high in the wall.
"Yes, I'd better go and see my father," he said, and the glow in his face faded. "It's well past lunchtime. If I don't see him every day, he forgets who I am."
When the boy had gone, the Feagles looked at one another.
"That lad is no having an easy life right now," said Rob Anybody.
"You've got to admit he's getting better," said Billy Bigchin.
"Oh, aye, I'll warrant he's no such a bunty as I thought. But that sword is far tae heavy for him, and it'll take weeks to get him any good," said Big Jan. "How he got weeks, Rob?"
Rob Anybody shrugged.
"Who can tell?" he said. "He's going to be the hero, come what may. The big wee hag'll meet the Wintersmith soon enough. She canna fight that. It's like the Hag o' Hags says. You canna fight a story as old as that. It'll find a way."
He cupped his hands.
"Come on, lads, away to the mound. We'll come back tonight. Maybe you can't make a hero all in one go."
Tiffany's little brother was old enough to want to be considered older still, which is a dangerous ambition on a busy working farm, where there are big hoofed horses and sheep dips and 101 other places where a small person might not be noticed until it's too late. But most of all, he liked water. When you couldn't find him, he was usually down by the river fishing. He loved the river, which was a bit surprising since a huge green monster had once leapt out of it to eat him. However, Tiffany had hit it in the mouth with an iron frying pan. Since he'd been eating sweets at the time, Wentworth's only comment afterward had been, "Tiffy hit fish, go bang." But He did seem to be growing up as a skilled angler. He was fishing this afternoon. He'd found the knack of knowing where the monsters were. The really big pike lurked in the deep black holes, thinking slow, hungry thoughts, until Wentworth's silver lure dropped almost into their mouths. When Tiffany went to call him in, she met him staggering up the path, much dishevelled, and carrying a fish that looked as if it weighed at least half as much as he did.
"It's the big one!" he shouted as soon as he saw her. "Abe reckoned it was touching under fallen willow, you know. He said they'll snap at anything this time of year. It pulled me over, but I held on. Must weigh at least 30 pounds.
About 20, thought Tiffany, but fish are always much heavier to the man who catches them.
"Well done. But come on in, it's going to freeze," she said.
"Can I have it for supper? It took ages to get it in the net. It's at least 35 pounds,
Wentworth said, struggling under the load. Tiffany knew better than to offer to carry it. That would be an insult. "No, it has to be cleaned and soaked for a day, and Mum's done stew for tonight. But I'll cook it for you tomorrow with ginger sauce."
"And there'll be enough for everyone," said Wentworth happily, "because it weighs at least 40 pounds.
"Easily," Tiffany agreed. And that night, after the fish had been duly admired by everyone and found to weigh 23 pounds, with Tiffany's hand on the scales helping it along a bit, she went into the scullery and cleaned the fish. Which was a nice way of talking about pulling out or cutting off everything that you shouldn't eat, which, if Tiffany had her way, meant the whole fish. She didn't much like pike, but a witch should never turn up her nose at food, especially free food, and at least a good sauce would stop it tasting of pike. Then, as she was tipping the innards into the pig bucket, she saw the glint of silver. Well, you couldn't exactly blame Wentworth for being too excited to extract the lure. She reached down and pulled out, covered with slime and scales but very recognisably itself, the silver horse. There should have been a roll of thunder. There was just Wentworth, in the next room, telling for the 10th time about the heroic capture of the monster fish. There should have been a rush of wind. Barely a draught disturbed the candles. But he knew she'd touched it. She felt his shock. She went to the door. As she opened it, a few snowflakes fell, but as if suddenly happy to have an audience, more began to pour down, until with no sound but a hiss, the night turned white. She held out her hand to catch some flakes and looked at them very closely. Little icy Tiffany's melted away. Oh yes, he had found her. Her mind went cold, but crystal wheels of thought spun fast. She could take a horse. No, she'd not get far on a night like this. She should have kept that broomstick. She shouldn't have danced. There was nowhere to run to. She'd have to face him again, and face him here, and stop him dead. In the mountains, with their black forests, endless winter was hard to imagine. It was easier here. And because it was easier, it was worse. Because he was bringing winter into her heart. She could feel it growing colder. But the snow was inches deep already in this short time. She was a shepherd's daughter before she was a witch, and at this time, in this place, there were more immediate things to do. She went into the golden warmth and light of the kitchen and said, "Dad, we must see to the flock."